WGNSTRadio.com presents a fan's perspective on Notre Dame sports. This is Dome and Domer.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer, joining me, Ed Jordanik. And for the next 20 or so minutes, we're going to talk about who is going to be the next head coach at the University of Notre Dame. Obviously, we could talk about the UConn game, but I don't know that there's really a whole heck of a lot to discuss there that's going to excite either one of us. So why not just move right on to the hot topic of the day, which is just that, who exactly is going to coach Notre Dame next year. As of the moment, nothing has been decided. However, there are some interesting developments happening, and not that I know anything, or Ed, if you know anything and you want to share that right away, why don't we just talk hypothetically about the whole idea of who would be a great fit for Notre Dame. And in my mind, I think we should start right at the top with Urban Meyer and why that actually makes sense, at least in my mind. So starting with that, I do think, though, that we got to set the groundwork as to, all right, what is the deal with Notre Dame? Why does it appeal so much on a national level to any college football coach that is out there? If you're looking at what's going on, anybody that is any good is being locked up right now by their university by either re-signing, and this goes just all the way to the pro ranks, and even announcers like John Gruden. I'm not saying that that's why it happened, but it doesn't, I mean, it clearly would make sense to me that the reason Gruden signed an extension is because all of a sudden the Notre Dame job comes open and they're like, whoa, he's actually doing pretty well for us this year. Let's not let that get away from us. Do you agree or disagree with that one?
I agree that this is a attractive job this year for a potential coach. I do not think that it was a very attractive job 5 years ago. I don't think that I'm a little more cynical about whether the Notre Dame job is a particularly special job in college football anymore. I think it might be again someday. I think the game has changed dramatically. I think you have to work your butt off to get players to come to Notre Dame. I think Charlie's done a good job selling the university in that regard. I think you have to work your butt off to make this job attractive to the coach that you want. I don't think that they'll have necessarily nearly as much difficulty as they have as they did 5 years ago or 8 years ago attracting an accomplished college coach, but I think that has very little to do with what Notre Dame is or what it was, and a lot to do with the fact that the program is in relatively good shape talent-wise, that it's in relatively good shape reputation-wise off the field, that it still has, at least for the time being, a national television contract, that it has obviously demonstrated a commitment to pay coaches a lot of money and pay assistant coaches a lot of money. I don't really think that there's much in the tank, in the Notre Dame mystique tank right now. Not that there can't be again, but this is a pretty mediocre football program on the field and has been for some time. The potential is there for waking the echoes again. The potential is there for reestablishing Notre Dame into kind of the upper echelon of college football. But there hasn't been any fight in the Fighting Irish since any of the players that were recruiting have been watching football on television. There hasn't been a big victory on the field for the Fighting Irish since any of the kids that we're currently recruiting have been watching football. And there hasn't been a Notre Dame football coach in a big game or really serving with any distinction since any of the guys that we're trying to attract now have been in the coaching business. So I think that we're probably going to get a good guy, but for reasons with reasons having not a whole hell of a lot to do with the fact that the job's at Notre Dame.
Maybe, but I guess the argument would be this. What is it that appeals about Notre Dame? And it's obviously not just because of the football program. I mean, there's a certain appeal that Notre Dame has worldwide, and it's evident. It's always talked about. It's the epitome of you either love them or you hate them. It's one or the other. And I think it's deep-seated from the standpoint that Notre Dame is what it is, which is a Catholic institution that stands for that very foundation. I mean, that's what it is. It's representative of Catholics being universal to this entire world. I mean, it is the premier Catholic university recognized the world over.
And you're saying that has something to do with next football coach?
I'm trying to paint a picture here, so follow me.
Okay.
I'm not there yet.
Because I'm not following you yet.
so my point I'm trying to make is, look, it's obvious that people have a special affinity for Notre Dame for one reason or the other. And my argument is the reason is because its very foundation, going way back, being Catholic, allowed itself to be bigger than what it was simply from a geographical standpoint. You know, you look at the University of Ohio State, it is basically a state school. And that state school has built itself into a good football program. Michigan, Georgia, Florida, USC being private. But the point being is all of these secular institutions serve the purpose from starting out from that standpoint, whereas Notre Dame, starting out as a Catholic university that tried to appeal to Catholics worldwide, and in our case in the United States, and pull in for that. And that's kind of what fed this ability to be what started out to be great football teams that were representative of Notre Dame that then kind of, you know, found its way throughout Catholics. Okay, and then ultimately through everybody else worldwide, and that's kind of what created this euphoria of, you know, why is Notre Dame so special? You know, why is it that everybody looks at Notre Dame when it comes to the very basics of good and what comes out of it? And I think that's what puts Notre Dame on a standing above everybody else. I think it's a piece to the puzzle is the point I'm trying to make. And my argument is now is the time, more than any other, that we need a guy that comes in here that understands that, that has that at least understanding of where he stands in the realm, in the bigger picture of things. Because that's what's always driven greatness out of Notre Dame. It's having that ability to recognize that, hey, we're representative of much bigger things, and it's not just the state of Indiana. Because that's where Notre Dame happens to be. I mean, it is the premier Catholic university in the entire world. And it's always been and has had great football teams that have played for it throughout, you know, obviously the 20th century here for the most part. For some reason, over the last 15 years, we failed in that department.
Well, I don't think it's for some reason. I think it's really clear. And I think we got a guy that just about epitomizes these kind of philosophical things that you were just talking about that I'm not sure I really understand, in Charlie Weiss. I mean.
No, I would argue that. No.
Charlie Weiss gets these things that you said. And by the way, the things that you're talking about, Mike, I think, relate more to the people that follow Notre Dame than the football program. I mean, I think that the Catholic identity, the fans, the Subway alumni, the universal appeal, all those things, is making, non-Notre Dame people throw up when they hear you talking about it. those things are part of what kind of makes up the fan base, but I don't really think they have much at all to do with the football program. And who will lead it?
No, I think it's intertwined. I think from the standpoint, now, Weiss being a former student here, I mean, that's his tie to Notre Dame. But, what we don't know is how much...
So tell me where this is leading, because obviously you've got somebody in mind that fits this description.
Yeah, well, obviously. And the point I'm trying to make is why Urban Meyer makes sense from that depiction, because I think Urban Meyer is a guy who understands this. He's been here. He knows what it's about. He's got experience with it. And I think that ultimately he sees himself as part of that mix. Otherwise, he wouldn't say the kind of things that he says. And I don't think it has anything to do with him just wanting to be at Mount Rushmore at Notre Dame to be one of the great head coaches of all times. It wouldn't make any sense. He's at the pinnacle of college football right now. He is the best. Everybody knows that. Everybody recognizes him as the top dog in college football. He does
it. So you're saying that the reason that Urban Meyer would consider leaving Florida and coming to Notre Dame to coach would be its universal appeal and the fact that it's somehow
it's something,
a different place and better than a state school.
Not just the state school. It's something special in the eyes of the world. It's something different to be at Notre Dame than it is any other university. And so what I'm saying is that Urban Meyer has to have something like that in the back of his mind. Otherwise, why even bother come here? What is he going to do? What is going to be so different from him succeeding at Florida as opposed to coming to Notre Dame, where
are you making some kind of an assumption that he's interested in this job? I don't see any evidence that he is.
Here's what I'm doing. I'm going to try and paint the picture as to why I think Urban Meyer will ultimately end up here. Okay? He may not, but I would say here's the arguments as to why he should end up here.
Well, we all can make arguments why he should, because he's obviously the best football coach in the country talk about the last four.
Definitely.
What he's accomplished is nothing short of amazing.
Right.
He took a Utah program and, turned it, went undefeated and went to Florida. If you want to lay the last 5 years at anybody's, the frustrations of the last 5 years at anybody's feet, lay them at Charlie, at his staff, lay them at the players. But number one, lay them at, the feet of Father Jenkins, the board of trustees, Kevin White, whoever the hell in senior management completely messed things up 5 years ago.
Okay, and that's right, and you're going right down the path I'm leading you toward. And that is that, look, if you take the pitch like that, if you go to a guy and you pitch it that way, then you appeal to something more to him than just some opening of a job. Then you're not just opening your wallet and saying, "All right, well, let's just pay the top dog in the college football world. Let's fly down to Gainesville and tell Urban Meyer, hey, what are you making right now? Because we're going to double that. Come coach us at Notre Dame." That isn't going to do it, and that's not going to appeal to anybody, and that's not really what we want. We've made that mistake, and there's no sense in doing it. Now, I think...
No, let me tell you something. If you want Urban Meyer, go down there and offer him twice what Nick Saban's making. You'll get him tomorrow. Okay.
Exactly. But
you're not going to get him because the job is at Notre Dame. I'm sorry, you're just not. There's a thousand things that he's thinking first about his ability to win at Notre Dame. He's thinking second probably about his family. And he's thinking third about his ego and where he'd fit in the pantheon of college football coaches. I don't know the guy, but he's a football coach. He's not Father Flanagan.
No, he's not, but he's a guy that's been around the University of Notre Dame.
There's a lot of guys that have been around the University of Notre Dame that I wouldn't hire to, shine my shoes.
True, but all I'm saying is that now you've got a chance to appeal to him on that level. I guess where I'm going with this is Notre Dame has got to approach a guy that responds to that kind of a pitch. That's the next head football coach that needs to be at Notre Dame. A guy that feels like...
No. The next head football coach at Notre Dame has to be, number one, an accomplished head football coach in the college ranks. Number two, somebody who understands how you win football games, which is controlling the line of scrimmage not making mistakes, making big plays when it counts, and bringing in playmakers. It has nothing to do with, in my mind, the mission of the university, the specialness of Notre Dame. None of that stuff is going to get us to the top five or to a BCS championship game. It's just not, Mike.
I mean, no, I don't think it's going to – well, I would argue to this, that the if you put it at that level, then we're no different than anybody in college football.
We aren't.
No, we are, Ed. Why do we have a – why do we have a contract with NBC?
Well – because
why doesn't Florida have one right now? Why doesn't CBS sign Florida?
Yeah, no, but okay, fine. I'm saying that we have a different fan base.
Okay,
but our football program isn't any different than Ohio State's. It's worse.
I mean, right at the moment. No, it is.
It's worse.
It is worse. But my point is that Notre Dame has the opportunity to appeal at a level that is above anybody else, especially a secular institution like Ohio State, because of who we are and what we do and what we're all about.
Yeah, but if you keep losing, you're going to have 50,000.
I know that, but they haven't. My point is, over the last 15 years, they haven't taken that approach with anybody.
What do you mean?
They haven't sold it that way, that here's what you're coming to do in coaching Notre Dame. And that's where
I think they've had that conversation with everybody.
I totally disagree. Absolutely, totally disagree, because how do you explain the bumbling that's gone on at that level for the last 15 years?
Now, wait a second. You don't think that all these things that you're talking about doesn't basically describe St. Jerry Faust? The guy is...
No, I do. I do. I agree. I think...
But he couldn't coach college football.
Exactly, but they went to the high school level, which that was a mistake.
Well... Okay, but
yeah, I mean, granted, I'm not saying that it always works out, but I'm saying that it's a piece. It has to be the lead pitch for you to come in and pitch Notre Dame as something special. And if somebody doesn't buy into that, then we don't want that guy here, because it's ultimately you're going to have to. You want a guy leading this university that has consistently, like everybody else, done it in the past, recognizing that it is something special. And that's what makes it different and unique and carries the torch for everybody else that sees what we're all about and makes us what we are.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why Notre Dame stands out.
Well,
now,
maybe, but that's just stuff that I think, you know, makes a certain segment of the fan base feel good, but it doesn't translate into wins. It doesn't translate into execution. It doesn't translate, you know, into
playmaking. No, I agree, but all I'm saying is, granted, don't get me wrong, I'm not saying let's go hire any coach that carries a rosary in his hand. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is you want that mix where they have that as the basis, the starting point, just like Lou Holtz did. Just like him recognizing that, hey, there is something special going on here, and a lot of it has to do with the lady on top of the dome. That is the perfect fit for Notre Dame. And that's somebody that recognizes that, yeah, this is an awesome opportunity.
What was Ara Parseghian's recognition of those things? When he got to Notre Dame, you know, from Northwestern with a relatively, you know, with relatively modest accomplishments at Northwestern, I mean, with nothing, you know, in the way of, you know, certainly wasn't a Catholic guy, wasn't, as far as I know, a particularly religious guy. Notre Dame grew on him. He didn't come to Notre Dame, you know, thinking like, okay, this is the place where, you know, it was just a great job that opened up, and he was a great football coach in the eyes of the, you know, the administration at that time, and they hit a home run. I mean, they hired the right guy from a football coaching perspective. There weren't any kind of grandiose ideas like, you know,
I don't think this guy gets what we're about. I agree, but I think that ultimately there's still that pitch of you're going after a quality guy that has respect that they consider to be, I mean, granted, this is all just no-nonsense stuff, and you want to grab somebody that's a quality leader, and I think Ara Parseghian was that. I don't think that the point I'm making is that you don't go after anybody just strictly from a football standpoint, and that's it. You know, we're no different than Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State. Line them up. Let's try and get the best coach we can and then move on. Like, it's got nothing to do with anything about the university. That the football program I don't think the football program sits over there on the other side of Juniper Road and is devoid of anything that goes on from the university standpoint. I mean, if that were the case, then Jenkins would have no say whatsoever in who we end up hiring.
Well, no, I mean, the reason he has a say is because, you know, there certainly are standards. I mean, and there should be, but I mean, the other reason he has a say is because it's a huge financial commitment. But that's the reason why all university presidents have a say in who they end up in big time college football. I mean, they're huge. It's a huge financial commitment. It's a huge reputational thing. It's a huge recruiting tool. It's a huge fundraising tool. I mean, this is business. It's big business. And yeah, Notre Dame needs to find a guy that kind of understands, you know, the mission of the university and supports it. But
let's take that full circle then, because here's where I'm going. I think Urban Meyer fits that.
We all think he fits it.
If that's true, then
but they're not going to get Urban Meyer. Why are we even talking about this?
Because the reason is you go after him with that pitch. You say, all right, look, Urban Meyer, sit down, hear us out on this.
Consider it that
it's a much bigger thing than just whether or not we've got a bigger contract than Alabama's got or Michigan's going to offer you or whoever. It's not strictly going to come down to money.
And you think that's going to sway him over the fact that his wife doesn't want to live in South
Carolina? No, if that's true.
Or he doesn't want to transplant his younger kids or
absolutely.
Whatever.
If that's true, then that's all the more reason why we need to go after him. And if the reasons he gives us for not coming here is because of that, then you got to respect the man for that.
Right.
But if the reasons he gives for not coming here is because he's not hearing a pitch from the top down that's resonating with him, then shame on us.
Oh, of course.
Let me ask you this.
The money and the talent are a lot more appealing to Urban Meyer than the whatever.
If that were true, Ed, then why would he say in an interview earlier this year on the radio that his dream job is Notre Dame?
The same reason that he would say that, when asked about it later, that he loves Florida and he's never going to leave. I mean, you know, these guys say stuff.
I don't think so. I don't think a guy of his stature, you don't make that kind of a mistake on a radio.
Listen, Mike, you know what? Maybe at one point in his football coaching career, Notre Dame was his dream job. There's no doubt about it. But the fact of the matter is the guy's accomplished a heck of a lot since then. He's gone and he's won at Utah. He's won national champion. I mean, people change. Just because you're a kid and you grew up loving Notre Dame doesn't mean you can't grow up and be a love Michigan. You know, if you move there and you become a coach there and your family likes it there, doesn't mean that your loyalties can't change. Just because if you're born in Ann Arbor, you know, and you go there and you play football, and then you start coaching and you end up at Stanford, doesn't mean you can't grow to love Stanford and make that your home.
No, I agree with you, but I would say that, again, Notre Dame has that appeal that's special from that standpoint.
It has that appeal to us because we went to school there and we're fans. But it's not the same for, you know, I mean, yeah.
I would agree. To somebody that's on the outside that doesn't know anything about it, of course, I totally agree, but that's not Urban Meyer.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer has been here, has lived it, he knows it. There's a certain sense you get among talking to Notre Dame faithful that they get it when you're talking to them. And I'm arguing that I think Urban Meyer is that, and that's the reason I'm saying.
Well, let's say that everything that you're saying is true.
Then I think it comes down to...
Who's your second choice? Because he's not coming here. I mean, he's just not. You know, I mean, like I said before, we're fortunate because Charlie is leaving the program in relatively good shape from a talent perspective.
It's night and day from the way Willingham went.
Yeah, exactly. So who among the realistic candidates?
I think the problems right now are everybody's shoring up anybody that they don't want to leave. So we got a real problem.
But I would say this.
I don't think anybody stands out in my mind as to who that would be. I mean, I think it's going to be a very difficult decision for us outside of Urban Meyer. It really is. I just don't see us being able to.
Yeah, but see, again, you're kind of looking at this like it's our decision when it comes to Urban Meyer.
No, I don't think it is.
All we've got to do is go down there.
Well, I think we got to make a statement. I mean, we have to
picture for him.
We have to go after him. There's no doubt about it. I'm sure we have, and I'm sure we've given him the pitch. And I would hope that the pitch was something special like that. Appeal to something that can give you a chance to win, because if you try and go in there and appeal with your pocketbook, it ain't going to happen.
So if he is all these things that you say he is, and he basically goes back on everything he said at his press conference today and screws Florida, then is he really the guy that you want? If those are his best way he operates?
I don't know that he has. I mean, what is a guy doing asking him that to start his press conference? What is he supposed to say? What if he hasn't signed anything with Notre Dame yet? What if they're still talking?
What do you say? You're a hell of a lot more circumspect, and you answer a lot more carefully than saying, I'm going to be here as long as they'll have me, and, you know, telling.
Opposed to saying what? Well, how would you answer that question? I don't know of another way to say that.
You'd say it really, you'd be really careful.
Well, I'm talking.
I don't want to hear any questions. What's that?
You say, well, I'm talking, but I haven't.
No, you say, no questions about Notre Dame. We're talking about my seniors today.
Then it's hanging out there. Then you didn't address the question.
Well, okay, but at least you have your integrity.
Well, I mean, integrity, he might be out of a job if Florida
thinks that. No.
You never know. I don't know. I mean, who knows what his agent told him? I mean, who knows any of that kind of stuff? And who knows whether or not anything is going on behind
the scenes? You can't have it both ways. You can't be like, you know, we want this, you know, guy who is most in sync with our values, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, but it's okay if he basically just says, you know, I'm staying at Florida for as long as they'll have me. And then, hey, Florida, see you later, you know, 2 weeks later.
That's because you don't know what happens during that 2 week time period. I mean, who knows? I mean, who's to say, you know, what's going on behind the scenes? I think we can't judge based on comments that are made now or up until anything were to happen or if anything doesn't happen. My point is that, okay, if it is an Urban Meyer, then granted, we need to go after the next best guy that I think, again, I don't hide that one, that they have to think that Notre Dame is something special and view it that way. And if you get a guy like that, you get the best possible coach that's out there, the guy that's the best possible fit that has both the qualities of being able to coach a football team and has proven success doing that and has a special affinity for the university. I think John Gruden fits that mold. I mean, I think Gruden is a guy that thinks differently about Notre Dame. And I think he would come in with that kind of passion in his back pocket and approach it that way.
I'd be willing to go with a guy who's a hell of a good football coach that doesn't think Notre Dame is anything special, and then 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now, he realizes, or he feels that it's special. I don't care if the guy who we hire thinks Notre Dame is special today. I want him to think Notre Dame is special 5 years from now.
That's fine. I'll take that. He's got to have that willingness and ability to accept it. Yeah, I'm saying that the pitch from Notre Dame's standpoint, they can attract that kind of guy that looks at it that way. And there are people like that, and I'm arguing there are guys out there that feel that way. And that's why a guy like Urban Meyer would make the comment 6 months ago that, hey, you know what, it is a dream job for me. I mean, why do you say that? Why isn't Michigan a dream job for you? Why isn't, you know, I mean, that's my whole point, is that there's something about Notre Dame that appeals, and it's at a higher level than any of the other normal universities that are out there. And that's why.
You know what? I think the proof is in the pudding. If it was so damn special, he would have figured out a way to get here 5 years ago.
Yeah, but he could. I mean, if you listen to what he said, hey, my family, my wife wanted no part of it. I mean, you got to respect the guy if that's truly why he decided not to take the job. I mean, maybe there's other. I think there was other factors.
No. 5 years ago, he was at Utah. Okay, he would have gone where he thought he had the best chance. He went where he thought he had the best chance to win, and the most support from the university to win national championships. He didn't think that was Notre Dame. He thought it was Florida, and that's where he went.
No, but he also mentioned that
business decision.
No. He also said that his wife wanted no part of living in South Bend.
Then why in the world do you think she would now?
Because things have changed. You just said yourself earlier that things change.
No, what? No, things have changed at Notre Dame. Things haven't changed for her. My point, Mike, is about when Urban Meyer left Utah 5 years ago, he had a chance to come to Notre Dame. If it was his dream job, he would have figured out a way to make that work. And either it was a business decision for him, which I believe it was. He didn't think that he had the resources and the table was set as well for him at Notre Dame as it was at Florida. And if you're telling me that it was family considerations, I don't know how those have changed in 5 years. I don't know why his family
I think
they weren't 5 years ago.
I know. I think the argument that he gave was that he could recruit in-state at Florida, and with where their kids were at in age, it wouldn't require him being on the road all the time like it would at the University of Notre Dame. You can't recruit inside the state of Indiana. I mean, you're recruiting nationally all the time, whereas down in Florida he wasn't. At least that's what he said. So I'm going to assume that truly did have something to do with it. Otherwise, why even hear Notre Dame out? Why even have us fly out there and hear him out if the door was shut before we even got out there?
Leverage.
I think
leverage.
Maybe, but I think the deal was already done with Florida, and I think that he really felt like that's where he needed to go. And but in any event, it's all hearsay on our part to kind of guess.
I think some kind of back to earth kind of issues that we should talk about. Number one is that, okay, what are the big things that are going to, I think, affect a coach, a good football coach who's looking at this team? I mean, huge things like Dane Chris's health in the spring, how quickly he's going to recover from this knee injury. Other things like how many of these guys in this class does this new coach feel are worthy of a Notre Dame scholarship, or do they fit into his idea of what a good football player is, and how many can we hang on to? I mean, the early returns are fairly positive in terms of recruits that are willing to honor their commitment and who are waiting to see what's going to happen. The other things that I think are really important are what kind of latitude is this coach going to be given in terms of hiring of assistants, in terms of bringing people to admissions. I mean, my understanding is right now is that kind of, that we're in as much of a accommodative phase in terms of admissions as we have been since the Vinny Serrato years. In other words, that if Charlie can bring in a kid that say, hey, this guy is going to go to class, he's going to work hard, that there's a good chance that he can get him through the door. I think that those are the kind of discussions that a coach is going to have, because these guys are football coaches first and foremost. They want to come to Notre Dame and win. They see a cupboard that isn't bare. They see I think that if a Brian Kelly, if a Paul Johnson, if a Gary Patterson, if a Bob Stoops or Urban Meyer are looking at tape of Notre Dame this year, it wouldn't shock me if they said to themselves, shoot, we could have won that game. Could have won that game.
Absolutely.
This is a 10 or 11 win football team with the talent on the field.
Right, absolutely. I totally agree with you. I do. I would also echo this. I really do think that the only way we screw up and we don't get a top quality football coach is if the administration screws this up. I mean, I really think that if they just allow things to happen, let the deal be brought to them, and they just rubber stamp it one way or the other, that's music to our ears, and that's what needs to happen. The second they start dipping their hands in this, that's where things get out of control. And my argument would be that they've shown signs of that in the past. Rick Majerus comes to mind. I just think that if they can just stay apart from it and don't get involved until the deal's done and all you're doing is okaying it, then that's going to be all the better for it. And you better have a damn good reason if you are going to knock someone off as to why you're doing it.
Right. Well, the indications are that, you know, Swarbrick is a pro, and he has the trust of the senior management, and they are, you know, he is clearly the point man on this, that he clearly had a discussion with, you know, Charlie at the end of last year that said, you know, this is kind of the scenario under which you'll have a year six, and this is a scenario under which you won't. And obviously, he won't, which means, like any good lawyer, Swarbrick has spent a lot of time,
investigating his options, right?
Scenario planning, you know, right. If A happens, what's B? If B happens, what's C? If D, so, I mean, it would not surprise me if this has been, you know, something that's been going on for a while, and now he's trying to execute, he's trying to take his due diligence, to use a phrase that Charlie likes to use, and figure out who this leads to, and then kind of go out and, you know. So it's going to make or break kind of his tenure at Notre Dame. I'm talking about Swarbrick. Unfortunately, because of the way that, you know, Notre Dame operates, the board of trustees and the senior management and the good fathers escape all accountability when it comes to these decisions, and they figure out how to scapegoat people, when the fact of the matter is that they're the ones that have let us down as fans for the last three hires. They didn't do their homework. They didn't look at history to see what an incredible disparity there is in between proven college football coaches' success at Notre Dame versus people who haven't had any, even throwing era out of that group, okay? You just look at the guys that had success at the college level before they came to Notre Dame, and throwing Era out of that group because he was only at Northwestern a few years and didn't play in a bowl game or win a bowl game. Just taking the coaches that played and won in bowl games, head coaches, and in college before they got to Notre Dame, the winning percentage, when you take into account Devine and Holtz and Leahy, is over 80%. And for the guys that they brought in that didn't have any success at the college level, Willingham, Davey, Weiss, Parsegan, Kuharik, Brennan, winning percentage less than 600, and that's throwing Parsegan, one of the best winning percentages in the group, in with those guys. That's what a disparity there is. And management has made this a walk in the wilderness for 15 years because of arrogance, because of this,
We're the elite Harvard of the Midwest now. And I think that was clearly indicated by them in the Willingham hire. They wanted to make a statement that said, hey, this is not a football school only. This is not what we're all about.
No. What happened was with the Willingham hire is that they didn't do their homework. That they thought that they could, bring in some head football coach. And they found themselves in a position where they, didn't do their homework on George O'Leary, and then they had to scramble and take somebody in Division I that wasn't locked up, that had some reasonable success, and that also fit with their values and standards. And they ended up, taking a guy that, kind of fit the kind of profile, but was all hat and no cattle. I mean, it just wasn't a top coach. So the reason we've had, 15 lousy years is because three big mistakes by senior management.
I would argue that we're not in a position to make another mistake, because if we do, we could end up we could become irrelevant. We'll lose the NBC contract eventually. Will then become completely irrelevant, and it may be unrecoverable for quite some time if they screw up one more bad hire. So this is now the final moment of life or death for this program for quite a while if they screw up one more.
I agree. It's a big decision. It's a real big decision, a real important decision. I think that the national media and kind of some of the so-called radio punditry, who think that this is more about, the problem is more Notre Dame than it is, the coach that is hired, I think is, is wrong and uninformed and taking a very simplistic view of this. I mean, the fact of the matter is that there are a whole hell of a lot of football teams with a lot less talent that play a lot better on Saturdays than we do. The issue, you know, 2-3 years ago certainly was a problem with the talent level on the field. This year, on the defensive side of the football, there's only one or two, playmakers, but we had enough talent on the defensive side of the football to win 10 games. Nobody can tell me differently. I don't, these guys who say we didn't tackle anybody, we didn't sack anybody, and a lot of that was because of, in some cases, effort, and in other cases, scheme. But this was not a down year.
No, I mean, I think it's safe to say a good coach could have easily gone 10-2 at Notre Dame this year. I totally agree with that. I mean, we didn't need a whole lot of magic to turn our season into 10-2 versus what we're going to end up finishing at.
Well, I think the commentary about the next coach has to know who he is, feel comfortable in his own skin as a coach, is dead on. It has to have somebody. It has to be somebody with an identity about, okay, this is the kind of football we're going to play. You know, you didn't always agree with certain play calls of Holt. You didn't always agree with certain decisions, but you knew what the character of the team was going to be.
Exactly.
It was going to be controlling the line of scrimmage first and foremost on both sides of the ball. And we haven't done that in the Charlie Weiss era, and it has meant that he has never found a defensive identity. And the offensive identity has been, like we said on the last show, some great moments of sizzle, but not a lot of consistency, not a lot of, you're not helping out your defense if that's the weak part of your football team, and when you score it takes you a minute and a half.
Right, exactly right.
You got to keep your defense off the field if that's the lousy part of your football team.
Yeah, I mean, we don't control football games. We haven't for quite a while. We literally do not control the game from start to finish, and I think that's what Holtz was able to do. I mean, he just built a running machine that seemed to be going downhill all the time, and even when it was close, we eventually would eke it out, and it was through sheer strength. And we just don't have that. We don't control football games at all. We react to it.
Yeah, and it's a psychological thing, Mike. I mean, when you are able to, I'm not advocating, Woody Hayesland returning to South Bend, but what I do think is that, if you look at the successful teams right now in college football, number one, their front sevens are very strong, not necessarily dominant, but they can give you fits for four quarters. And the other thing that they can do is they can wear you down. Alabama wears you down. TCU wears you down. Texas has a high-powered passing attack, but they also can run the football. Florida obviously can run the football, but they've got a special quarterback who can also run it. But you're going backwards when you're in the fourth quarter. And you're relying on your skill position guys to win the game as opposed to your guys up front. And, we got a real hardcore lesson in that on Saturday, because Connecticut beat us with perhaps the worst quarterback I've ever seen, win a football game at Notre Dame Stadium or against Notre Dame, with an absolutely, dominant.
Well, he made one great throw, and it happened to be a throw that Walls finally turned on and looked. It just was a perfect throw. I mean, what do you do? It was absolutely beautiful right in the end zone. Couldn't have put it any better than what he did. But, hey, that's the breaks. I mean, that's the way it turns out.
No, you give him credit for that, but the fact of the matter is Notre Dame was incredibly fortunate for that game to even go into overtime.
It was, yeah.
The penalties down the stretch against
UConn. Both of those. The second one I thought maybe was a holding call, but the first one clearly wasn't. I mean, not even close.
Yep.
But in any event. All right, unfortunately, we're going to have to wrap it up there. We just broke.
Oh, Mike, this is just
literally
a miserable, miserable week. But you know what? Seriously, I am. I think we should leave this on a fairly optimistic note, and that is the fact that, you know, we are going to change directions. The likelihood is that we're going to get an accomplished, competent college head football coach to take over this program. The cupboard is not bare. I think another thing is that sometimes – you know, if you've played sports or if you're in business and you think you're giving it your all, you think you're giving it 100%, you think you're doing all you can to win, you're deluding yourself a little bit. It takes someone else to bring that out of you. And I think, unfortunately, Charlie was not able to bring that out of the guys that he's coached here for the last 5 years. And hopefully whoever his successor is can find that element and take this program to the next level.
Yeah, I would love to see an emotional guy come in here. I think it would be great. It would be a change of pace, and it would be what the college game needs, and that is you need guys to be able to react emotionally, because that is a big part of the game. So who knows? We'll find quite a bit out more, I'm sure, in the coming days here. But for now, you've been listening to Dome and Domer.
Oh, and by the way, should we have told people who might be listening to this and getting their first dose of Notre Dame news for the morning that the unconfirmed report is that Jimmy Clausen got punched in the face Saturday night after the UConn game and may not play Saturday against Stanford. So when it rains, it pours, unfortunately.
You said something about ending this on an optimistic note.
Oh, that's right. I did, didn't I?
In any event.
The optimistic note is that
thanks.
We'll get a good look at John Goodman, our future quarterback on Saturday.
You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. If you would like to post a comment on the website, and something tells me there might be a few, do so at www.domeanddomer.com, or if you want it private and you just want to send us an email, it's info@domeanddomer.com. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.